Welcome to From Shadows to Light, a whole human approach to mental health, hosted by Olivia Catchman. This podcast series is centered around a book by the same name. 11 courageous individuals challenge the stigma around mental health and share their wisdom of a multidisciplinary, whole human approach to mental wellness that considers the body, mind, emotions, and spirit of the individual. And now, here's your host, Olivia Catchman, founder of the Phoenix Alchemy and Transformational Guide.
Today, we are starting off with Ruth Ann Weeks, and she is just a delight. She's a very systems-orientated lady, and she's a certified information and referral specialist in the human service sector. And Ruth Ann went on to graduate as a human resource manager. And she's recently obtained her CMHA, which is Canadian Mental Health Association's certification as a psychological health and safety advisor. So welcome, Ruth Ann.
Thank you, Olivia. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am just going to dive right in. And I'd love to ask you, what does psychological safety in the workplace mean to you?
Well, first of all, I want to make the distinction between psychological safety in a personal view and in an organizational view. For me to be psychologically safe, I do what I need to do to keep me safe. So I practice good self-care. I am responsible for my own mental health. I do what I need to do to keep me safe and keep me psychologically functioning well. Organizational psychological safety is absolutely up to the organization. That's providing a culture where business flourishes, where it's safe and encouraged to make mistakes, where it's safe and encouraged to take interpersonal risk in expressing ideas, thoughts, opinions. When you're operating in an environment of psychological safety, the natural byproduct of that is improved efficiencies, increased innovation, increased profits and profitability within your team. So there's 13 psychosocial factors that have been identified that make up psychological safety. Things like organizational culture, the day-to-day operations, clear leadership and expectations, civility and respect, things like that, that really help people feel supported and contributing members of a team.
I'm sure you don't just fall into this type of work without having experiences on your own end. So can you give me an example of a time in your life where you felt you were working in a psychologically unsafe environment?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can, just like many other people that are working in toxic workplace environments. I unexpectedly found myself unemployed in 2015 after getting covertly bullied out of a position that I was in. And it was definitely an environment that had a very authoritative culture. There was no safety in asking questions or expressing ideas. The kind of covert bullying that actually got me out of there was I would say things like, let's move those files. And what would be said was, we can't destroy files. So, it's really about communication and being able to be a part of a team, a contributing part of a team where you're not walking on eggshells all the time, trying not to set off the boss or set off a coworker or set off the, corporate bully or whatever that might look like. It's working in an environment that is respectful and where everybody is encouraged to contribute ideas. Because, when you're experiencing some sort of an event at work where, you've got a problem that you need to solve, it might not necessarily be your A team that comes up with the solution. So sometimes, it's best to utilize the whole team. And it doesn't mean that every idea is going to be adopted, obviously. But sometimes those that innovation and those good ideas can come from someplace within the organization that you least expect it.
Wow, I wish I worked for one of those, because I feel like one of my superpowers is coming up with creative solutions. And I definitely have worked in workplaces where I was offering different ideas, different things that could be incorporated. And unfortunately, it always seemed to get translated as I'm aiming for the manager's position and we need to remove her and fire her before she'll take over my role. And I had no aspiration for a manager's position whatsoever. I didn't feel I was undermining anyone. Just my brain works in that way. And I felt I had a lot to offer. And unfortunately, that's not honored everywhere.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And when it comes to workplace bullying, especially, very often it's because someone is threatened. Someone is feeling threatened by you, and that's their perception that may absolutely have no grounding in actual reality or intention, right? And very often in the workplace, when it is a bully situation, it's not like schoolyard bullies where it's the weak and, you know, the vulnerable that are targeted. It's usually that go-getter, someone who really wants to challenge the status quo and make improvements and who is really, you know, a type A kind of go-getter, has a lot to contribute and really wants to bring their best selves to work all the time. And sometimes that's because it's raising the bar and shaking up the status quo. And that can be threatening to people in an organization that doesn't have a strong culture of teamwork.
Absolutely. And change feels threatening to most people. And it seems like that's really echoed out into the greater world, because we obviously need some significant shifts and changes in our world. And if we don't disrupt the status quo, we might not be going in the right directions.
Right. And you know what, if things don't change, I mean, yes, change is hard for people. People get in their ways, they get a little bit complacent. You know, there are people in workplaces that have not been happy there, but if they've been there so long, they're invested, you know, they might have 2 or 3 years till retirement and they're just kind of coasting it out. And unfortunately, I mean, that's a sad way to live. But yeah, change is hard for people. But at the end of the day, if things aren't innovating and efficiencies aren't improving, then, you know, your business is dying. Business is dying. Even if it's successful now, if you don't keep up with changes and, you know, keep your finger on the pulse of the market and what's happening right now in workplace wellness, it's shifting so much. You know, it's today's workers are savvy and they're really doing their homework before they even apply to work for you. They're going online, they're seeing what your core values are. They're taking a look. Yeah, they're taking a look at what corporate social responsibilities you support. And today's workers are savvy. They're really doing their homework. And employers that don't innovate and get on board with workplace wellness programs are going to get left behind in attracting and retaining next generation talent.
I would say that's absolutely true, because there's just so much information out there and people want to work in a place that's not just safe, but fun and collaborative, and where you're not just strangers sitting in cubicles, but you actually have developed relationships of trust. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And being part of a team, you know, everybody wants to feel like they're contributing, right? And that they're contributing to the greater goal. So, you know, one of the best things that a leader can do is really get really clear on the vision of where they want the business to go. Communicate that vision to employees at all levels within the organization and build that cohesive team that's working, you know, in unison towards that vision in one way or another.
So, so important. I was kind of, just before we started this interview, listing down a number of traits of a psychologically unsafe workplace. And obviously you've really talked clearly about bullying. But what about things like posturing for that next position in the hierarchy, or competition or commission structures for businesses? What can you say to those types of business structures that celebrate that rather than the collaboration?
You're talking about sales competitions and that type of thing that determines, yeah.
Yeah, or else like your sort of corporate cubicle type job where everyone is trying to look for that next step up.
Well, you know, that's part of career pathing and management. And first is to speak to the first scenario where employers set up that environment of competition. You see that primarily in really heavy sales-focused organizations. Competition can be, you know, a driving factor. It can also come into play when you have a profit share program where, you know, employees get to divvy up a portion of the profits that are left over. It can also lead to some unhealthy practices if, you know, someone makes a mistake that's going to eat into the profits that, you know, everyone's going to get a share of. It can lead to some unhealthy workplace habits. So I think the best way to really handle that is to make sure that, you know, you have your policies and procedures in place that indicate that there is a zero tolerance for abusive behavior, and then make sure that everybody gets trained as to what is expected and prohibited conduct. You know, people don't necessarily
know. People need to know what the lines are that you
they cross. Absolutely do. And then you what you do from an HR perspective is you have your policies and procedures in place. You have everybody trained on what they are. You have them sign off that they are not going to perpetrate any sort of abuse in the workplace. And then, you know, it just sets the tone for interpersonal communications. Everything that comes in your head doesn't have to come out of your mouth. And, you know, quite frankly, I think a lot of those models of competition around sales are becoming outdated, particularly when it comes to promotions and putting people in leadership roles. Just because someone's a crackerjack salesperson doesn't mean they're going to be a crackerjack leader. And I think that's part of the problem right now with business, is that there are so many people in leadership positions that might be fantastic managers. They might be really good schedule makers and policy enforcers and procedure people, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're a leader.
Thank you. And it sounds like a lot of managers and organizational leaders, they need to implement that in a really proactive way in order to create that culture of safety for their employees. So what would be your like top three traits of a manager, for instance, who are doing great work?
Managers lead systems. Managers are responsible for creating policies and enforcing those policies. They're responsible for creating scheduling and dealing with that. They might manage the day-to-day operations. Leaders cast vision. Leaders inspire others. Leaders are the ones that people go to when they have a question or they have a problem that they need some clarity on. And it might not be someone that's in a position of leadership. Have you ever been in a group where, you know, the natural leader just they don't even have to do anything. The natural leader just ends up in a being that person that other people go to and that other people follow. So you might be a manager, but if there's nobody following you and seeking you out, that you're not a leader. So to speak to the top three leadership traits,
the visionary traits.
Yeah, you know, I see them working in a continuum like this. One of the very top leadership traits, leadership is having an attitude of service. Leaders are in service to the people that work under them or work with them. They lead teams. And yes, they cast that vision. And one of the top competencies for leaders is being authentic. And you can't have authenticity without vulnerability. So you also have to be vulnerable. and be willing to, you know, be that person that may be having a bad day, be that person that, you know, maybe is having a struggle with one of their children or a spouse or, you know, maybe a parent that's an elderly parent or something, and not trying to be a robot that just comes to work and leaves all of that emotion and turmoil at the door, but is vulnerable enough to be vulnerable and share that, you know, they also have human experience. And none of this authenticity and vulnerability are not possible without courage. It takes immense courage to be a vulnerable leader and to really approach leadership with that servant's heart and with that attitude and absolute commitment to serving the people in your organization. And they'll love you for it. You can't fake vulnerability. And your people will love you for it, and they'll follow you, and they'll help you to achieve your vision in ways that you can't even really imagine.
I really believe when people share their humanity and their the full spectrum of who they are with others, it is inspirational. And I, in relationship to mental health in the workplace, then it feels that that's an important skill, that vulnerability, so that people feel safe in approaching a leader within the company to even say, hey, I'm dealing with a lot of stress in my life right now, or I'm noticing that my health is declining. I suppose that leadership creates that sense that you can talk about those types of personal things, because we can't always leave them at the door when we come into the office or into our workplaces. They do affect us.
Yeah, we absolutely have to include a human factor. Now, that's not to say that we don't all have jobs to do. The jobs need to be done. You know, savvy workplaces have personal days that they build in to, you know, their employee wellness programs. And they have those supports in place that are there to just support people in their human experience, right? I think when the leader is able to express that vulnerability, not to the whole company maybe, but just to be that empathetic person. It really comes down to empathy, right? We all have lives outside of work, and things aren't always a bed of roses. And I mean, in this disruption that we're in right now with this global pandemic, it's really brought out the very best in leaders and the very worst in leaders. And those lines were drawn in the sand quite quickly. Whether you are working for an employer who is going to support you, especially with this pandemic situation, you know, we're all in the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat. And, you know, one person might be working from home, living their best life in their flip-flops on the deck with their laptop, and another person might be confined in a downtown apartment with a spouse who's been laid off, with three kids under 6 years old running around still trying to work from home. So I think we're in times right now where, you know, we have to really hold grace for people and just that empathy that will really help us to come alongside people where they are, hold space for them to be where they are, and support them in really practical ways.
In many ways, it sometimes takes those types of massive challenges to bring out those qualities that support staff even more. Do you think a lot of businesses, because of the pandemic, have actually created a stronger and more vibrant culture within their businesses?
I think that's happened quite a bit, yes. I think particularly because people in leadership roles are, you know, they're having their own struggles, right? They might be financial struggles related to their business. It might be, you know, worries about someone in their circle their family that might be immunocompromised, you know, elderly parents, that type of thing. You know, their own kids may be having disruption from school. And, you know, it's really been, I like to call it this great global reset. I think it's really giving them an opportunity, but at the same time, forcing them to really take a hard look at what their value systems are. What is important to them? You know, how do they want to spend the rest of their lives? Do they want to go back to, you know, the 9-to-5 grind with the hour and a half commute? Do they want to do that? Do they want to keep working from home? I think it's an opportunity, really, to really stop and examine. And yes, some from an organizational perspective, some have been brought much closer together. Some have been completely divided. Some organizations have really realized how unsupported they are as well. So I don't think there's any pat answer for that. I think it's really all over the board. But I do think that it is the ultimate time for businesses and organizations to really take a hard look at their culture and to be very strategic about how they go through the reopening process and how they rebuild their teams and create those safe, inclusive work environments that engage and support and inspire their workers.
It's so very important, and not just in this pandemic scenario, but in moving forward, it's also been a lot of other issues that have risen to our awareness, things like the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. I think we're at this place in our history where all these things are coming to the surface to be addressed. So can you talk a little bit more about how to create an environment that's free of gender discrimination, sexual identification discrimination, and even like the racial discrimination that occurs in the workplace? What could an employer, a leader within the company, or a manager even be able to do to make these types of environments more inclusive and safe?
So yeah, what you're really talking about is diversity and inclusion. And one of the best analogies I heard about that is diversity is being invited to the dance, and inclusion is actually being asked to dance.
Oh, that's a beautiful, beautiful statement.
So it's not just ticking off the box of, you know, Indigenous employee or person of color employee or so many women on the payroll or whatever. It's really creating that environment where every voice matters and everyone is included in contributing to the team. And I actually, it's funny that you say that, you brought that up, because I'm actually working on a program, because I think everybody wants to do this. I think there's enough awareness now. I mean, you mentioned the Me Too movement. You mentioned what's happening with the Black Lives Matter movement. I think we are increasing our global consciousness. And it's absolutely driven by the multi-generational workforce, in my opinion, as well. I mean, we've been working for decades now to build a break down the stigma around mental health and talking about mental health and you know, millennials now, Gen Zers that are 24 years old now and that are new graduates from post-secondary, they're okay talking about that stuff. For them, it's, you know, so that's a win for us that have been able to break down those barriers and those stigmas and have people talk about them. So I think most employers and business leaders recognize that it's important and that they have to make changes, but they might not know how. So I know in my work, I've developed a system Actually, I've had to pivot my business online, like many others, you know, as a corporate trainer, writer, speaker, and consultant. You know, people aren't having consultants come in and do training. So I've had to pivot my business online. And I'm writing a new cultural makeover program.
That's such important work, Ruthann. I'm so glad you're out there doing that, because that's what every culture in the workplace really needs right now, is to revisit those themes and to really integrate something new.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even if I think most employers want to have good, inclusive workplaces. They want to have respectful workplaces. And if they've got a history of toxicity in the workplace, it can absolutely be changed, but it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of factors you have to consider. Yeah, it's all fine and good to give everyone a training program and have them sign off on, you know, what they're going to say. But from an HR perspective, you really have to have your ducks in a row if you're going to try to discipline someone for not playing within the rules. Particularly if it's a culture that's been, you know, maybe roughneck or toxic, or, you know, there's been people that have been disrespectful or even bullying, that just toss it off as, well, you can't take a joke kind of thing. And creating that change, it takes time, but there is a system that can happen and can incorporate those changes. And I think it's something that most employers want to do.
Now, you mentioned before that absolutely we need to take radical self-responsibility as employees to take care of ourselves, our health, our wealth, our emotional states, our mental states of wellness. But at what point is the health and wellness of the employees part of a management's responsibility? Like, are they supposed to look at how people are doing and actually be savvy on the signs that there is a decline? And is there training out there that actually addresses that?
Most provinces now in Canada, and a lot of the world actually, have legislation right now through the Occupational Health and Safety Act, and Alberta is no exception. Employers are actually responsible to create environments of psychological safety and social well-being. You know, if there's an employee that's been bullied at work or experienced sexual harassment or doesn't feel psychologically safe at work, they can actually go on disability as long as they have a physician that is willing to put them off work on stress leave related to their lack of psychological safety in the organization. They can go on WCB, and that reflects on the employer. And, you know, in the legislation, every single incident that is reported must be investigated. And the employer has a responsibility to have policies and procedures in place, have everyone within their organization trained on those policies and procedures, and have all of their employees investigate any claims that have been made against them. And if they don't do their due diligence and they don't do what they need to do in order to come to a conclusion around that, that might be discipline up to and including termination, the employee has a right to go to occupational health and safety and report them. And nobody wants OH&S breathing down their back either. So yeah, it's not only the right thing to do, there's actually due diligence, within the legal framework. So yeah, it's a good point.
Is that a relatively new legislation that looks at psychological safety as an injury? If somebody's been working in a toxic workplace for a long time?
That came into effect June 1st of 2018 in Alberta.
Yeah, so it's relatively new.
Relatively new, yeah. In June of 2018, the Occupational Health and Safety Act under the NDP government was updated for the first time in over 40 years in Alberta. And Alberta was pretty much catching up to the rest of the country as far as that goes. Many other provinces have the same legislation in place. it's becoming known that, 500,000 workers in Canada a week aren't able to work because of mental health struggles that they're having. And that costs $6.3 billion to business and industry, but that's a drop in the bucket compared to the $50 billion that is lost in Canada due to mental health.
Those are startling numbers, and it's no little problem whatsoever. Just in sort of looking at the big picture, what would you say is the most important takeaway that you, most important message that you could possibly say to a corporation about their responsibility to create this psychologically safe environment going forward?
Well, I've had to be careful because I can be quite, you know, indignant about this when organizations don't do their due diligence and create safety. I mean, my heart, I started my business and my heart lies with supporting those that are suffering in toxic and abusive work environments. They're the people I want to reach. Ideally, I would love to reach them through their organizations by having the organizations create proactive response and systems, put systems in place to support employees so that it doesn't happen. A lot of times it's reactive, you know, they'll wait until they have an incident and then realize that they don't really know what to do about it. And at that point, they'll bring me in. But I have to be very careful and diplomatic because, you know, I can be quite pissy and indignant about this. You know, it's the law. It's the right thing to do. You know, the stats are in. The return on investment is huge for putting supports in behind this stuff. But I guess, you know, my strategy is to just choose to believe that employers, like most people, are doing the best they can with what they know. They're doing the best they can at their present level of awareness. And as we, you know better, we do better. That's Maya Angelou. And I have to believe that the same is true of them. You know, I think as they become more aware of these issues and the importance of these issues, and, you know, it takes time for new legislation to kind of play out. And I think most employers want to do the right thing. They just might not quite know how to get there. And so I'm really hoping that by offering them a system to enhance, tune up, or completely make over their organizational cultures with these things in mind, that it'll give them the tools that they need to be able to make the changes that they want to make and need to make to be supportive employers.
I'm just so impressed. This work is long overdue, and it's just so inspiring and so affirming that you're taking those steps to do that consultation work and be on the front lines of the change, working with the organizations that and companies that are going to make a stronger commitment to just being better in every single way. So thank you so much for sharing. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share before we wrap this up?
I just want to urge everybody to be gentle with themselves, to realize that everybody is doing the best they can where they are, and to just, you know, hold space for people to be. There are no bad feelings. You know, you can't tell someone that what they're feeling is invalid. So just to validate their feelings, hold space for them, be supportive, and be gracious and be kind.
Thank you so much for that. And just for sharing some of your wisdom today with us.
Thank you, Olivia. And I just invite the listeners, if they want any more information about what I'm doing, to please check out my website at harmonyintheworkplace.com.
Thank you once again, and I wish you all the best in developing and implementing your own special mark on the world of business. Thank you so much, Ruthann, and I wish Yeah, I wish you and Harmony in the workplace the utmost success.
Olivia Catchman is here to help serve those who are ready to rise up and feel the freedom of living their fullest potential, a life beyond their wounds. Olivia creates a safe, sacred place and intuitively guides people to let go of their limitations and suffering so they can reclaim their power and rebirth themselves anew. Her offerings include individual and group healing ceremonies, transformational energy work, spiritual dance, and embodiment practices. If you would like to know more, please visit www.phoenixalchemy.net. That's www.phoenixalchemy.net.